Golden State Media Concepts bring you the Bible Study Podcast. Reflect and journey the Bible as together we study God's Word and be inspired. Bible study made fun and informative for all ages. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, brought to you by the GSMC Podcast Network. I am your host, Sarah, and I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving and Thanksgiving weekend, however you spent it. Ours was nice. It was quiet, spent with some friends and not as big a group as usual, which was just fine. Just a small group, and we hung out and watched a little football, and in my case, slept through a little football, you know, as tends to happen. And it was just a really nice day. And now my husband and I are in the midst of packing because we are moving at the end of this week, just to a different house, not out of state or out of the city or anything, but still, packing and moving, it's always a challenge. And thank goodness my hubby's got a plan. I mean, I thought I was pretty good at moving. I've done it a lot, but I am nothing compared to this man and the way he goes about this process. It's amazing. At any rate, we are up to our eyeballs in boxes and packing tape and packing materials and, sorting, purging, doing all that good stuff. And it's a little crazy, but that is not why I'm here to talk to you today. I am here to talk to you about Bible texts. And it happens to be Christ the King Sunday, November 25th. That is the last Sunday in the liturgical year, and that is where we are. I've been talking about it and pointing toward it and saying we're getting closer. And we are here. It's the last Sunday of the church year. You could kind of consider this New Year's Eve how does that work when it's a whole week? I don't know, but you could kind of consider it, you know, the end of the church year. So New Year's Eve next Sunday would be New Year's Day, the beginning of a new liturgical year when we start Advent. And I've always liked Christ the King Sunday, and I don't know if it's because it's right before Advent, which is my favorite season, and so I get excited knowing that Advent is right around the corner. I learned some new things about Christ the King this year as I was going through, you know, just life and preparing podcasts and working at the Episcopal church that I work at. I did not realize that not all Episcopal churches celebrate Christ the King every year. Some do. The church that I work at does and did today, but I didn't realize that it's not a feast day that's terribly old either. It hasn't been around that long. In fact, it was established by Pope Pius XI in 1925. I didn't realize it was so new. It is. He established it in 1925 to counter what he regarded as the destructive forces of the modern world: secularism in the West and the rise of communism in Russia and fascism in Italy and Spain. Pope Pius intended to oppose the rule of Christ to the totalitarian claims of these ideologies. And the harbingers of the Nazism soon to seize Germany. By intention or coincidence, the festival of Christ the King also landed on the last Sunday in October, coinciding with the Protestant celebration of the Reformation. So he could have planned that, or maybe it was coincidence. I don't know. What I just told you came from an article by Frank C. Sen from the Lutheran Forum. Pope Pius XI, 1925. I did not realize that it was that new, and that I kind of assumed that most of the mainline denominations celebrated it, at least Catholicism, Lutheranism, Episcopals, you know, I assumed, and you should never, ever assume. The The festival of Christ the King was then moved to the last Sunday of the church year in the reform of the Roman liturgy after the Second Vatican Council, and thus it was no longer to serve as a quote-unquote counter-Reformation Day celebration. But the new location proved to be more than an ecumenical gesture. It was placed at the end of the church year with its traditional eschatological emphasis. Eschatological is just a large fancy word for the end times. If you listen to the texts for often assigned for Christ the King, they do have that kind of end times feel, and we've been going through some of those apocalyptic end time readings in the last couple of weeks if you have been listening with me. So now it's placed at the end of the church year, and that the end of the church year does have a bit of that end times about it. I kind of lost my train of thought. There was a line in here about talking about the end times because it is the end of the church year, which makes some kind of sense, I suppose. But something else that I was surprised to learn was that some Lutheran denominations do not celebrate Christ the King, and others didn't really celebrate it until the 1970s, which it was the Inner Lutheran Commission on Worship adopted an amended version of the three-year Roman lectionary in the late 1970s. And when they did that, the Sunday of Christ the King came with it. I guess it's not surprising that it wasn't celebrated by Lutherans before that, considering that it had originally kind of taken on that counter-Reformation feel and took place on the same Sunday as Reformation Sunday. But so the 1970s for Lutherans, I didn't know Christ the King is about the same age as I am, because I came around in the 1970s as well. So maybe that is why I like this Sunday particularly. I really, really don't know. At any rate, that's a bit of history and some new to me history about Christ the King. Maybe you already knew a bunch of that, but I always like learning new things, especially about my own tradition. I think one thing that I appreciate about Christ the King Sunday is that especially with the emphasis on the end times, on the eschatological readings, we get a different idea of a king. Often when I do children's sermons on this Sunday, I ask the children, what is their image of a king, or what is their image of royalty? And, you know, they say fancy clothes and a crown, you know, maybe a gold crown, maybe a crown with jewels, maybe sitting on a throne, etc., etc. And then I'll say, well, what does Jesus look like? And, you know, Jesus does not look like what they just described. Jesus does not wear fancy clothes. Jesus does not wear a crown. In fact, in the reading that we will talk about on Wednesday when we move to the New Testament lessons, that is the reading where Jesus appears before Pontius Pilate. That is right at the time of his crucifixion. That is not the way we picture a king. You know, Jesus did wear a crown, but it was a crown of thorns. He certainly wasn't finely dressed. In fact, they took his clothes and divided them amongst themselves. The guards did. So even when he is processing into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday, it's still kind of kingly. I mean, there's a procession and the people are cheering him on, but those cheers so suddenly turn from Hosanna to crucify him. And even then he's coming in on a donkey or a colt, and he's coming into accolades, but it's really not necessarily the image of a king that we might have. So we do talk about Christ the King, but Christ the King as an image of God's kingdom. And God's kingdom is not necessarily what we might expect a kingdom to look like, right? God's kingdom is, as we've always talked about, it is about service, it is about love, it is about everyone coming together in God's kingdom for that feast that we are all waiting for and preparing for, that, you know, involves people that we might not currently very much care for, and yet they're all of God's creation is brought together in that moment. So that's probably enough of just kind of some background and some initial conversation about Christ the King. Let's go ahead and take our first break of the podcast, and when we come back, we will look at the first Old Testament text assigned for this week. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I will be right back.
you want to be healthier, yet you just don't know what to do. All these shows telling you this and that, but nothing seems to work. Well, listen close. Golden State Media Concepts has got something great for you. The Health and Wellness Podcast, dedicated to workout trends, healthy eating habits, diet, and everything about healthy living. Join us in our banters as we help you not just live life to the fullest, but live it to the healthiest.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast on this Christ the King Sunday. As I mentioned before the break, we are going to look at the first Old Testament text assigned for today, and that comes to us from Daniel chapter 7, verses 9 through 10 and 13 through 14. So there you go, kind of what we were talking about before the break, about those apocalyptic end times kind of texts. Again, not maybe what you would expect on something called Christ the King Sunday if you were just, you know, somebody that walked in off the street and thought, hey, what's this celebration about? Might not be what you would expect if you didn't know something about the Jesus story. At any rate, those verses from Daniel are as follows. As I watched, thrones were set in place, and an ancient one took his throne. His clothing was white as snow, and the hair of his head was like pure wool. His throne was fiery flames, and its wheels were burning fire. A stream of fire issued and flowed out from his presence. 1,000,000s served him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood attending him. The court sat in judgment, and the books were opened. As I watched in the night visions, I saw one like a human being coming with the clouds of heaven, and he came to the Ancient One and was presented before him. To him was given dominion and glory and kingship, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion that shall not pass away, and his kingship is one that shall never be destroyed. Again, that is Daniel chapter 7, verses 9 through 10 and 13 through 14, and it's pretty easy to see why it would be chosen for Christ the King. I mean, there's a lot of kingship and kingly visions and kingly descriptions involved here, but I think we definitely need to hear some commentary on this because... Well, I personally need to hear some commentary on this. I don't know if you feel like you need to hear some commentary, but I definitely need some unpacking of that text. And this commentary comes to us again, as last week, from Roger Nam, Associate Professor of Biblical Studies at George Fox Evangelical Seminary in Portland, Oregon. And he says that since the earliest churches, these verses that we read today have informed a wider picture of the person of Jesus of Nazareth, particularly aspects of his divine being. Thus, it is a fitting passage for the Sunday when we celebrate Christ the King. But in studying this text, he says that he would like to encourage us to take a moment and consider the reading of Daniel within its narrative context. Yes. Thank you. I always appreciate that because there are multiple contexts in which we can read a text. So Daniel is set within a group of Judeans under oppression from the Babylonian Empire. So as we think about this text, we're encouraged not to think about Jesus per se. I mean, obviously you can see a lot of similarities in the text, but instead consider the perspective of a Judean long before the time of Christ. And it's important to consider, again, like I said, all the contexts, and obviously looking at this text through the lens of what we know about Jesus is one way, but it's also important to understand how it would have been first read and first heard. So he goes on to say that the immediate context indicates that the oppression is much more severe than a colonized group of displaced Judeans struggling to maintain their identity, as in the earlier chapters of Daniel 1 through 6. Rather, the opening dream in Daniel 7, which we didn't read here, suggests a very different realm of direct persecution and a fight for physical survival, as symbolized by a set of terrifying beasts. This context then leads the way to the introduction of a divine being. Within forms of poetic apocalypse, the passage displays rich imagery for this Ancient of Days. And that moniker, the Ancient of Days, he says, articulates a defining characteristic of this person. He is literally one of many days, meaning that he surpasses any temporal boundaries of the specific events of the narrative. Immediately after this introduction as the Ancient of Days, we see this person sitting on a throne, acting as an authority, and this is a precursor for enforcing judgment. He says you can think of a modern parallel moment when someone of ascribed authority enters a designated space, like a judge entering, or even a principal entering a classroom filled with anxious children. So kind of, you know, that moment of, oh, okay, this is an important person. Something is about to happen. The text then gives a physical description of God, which is a rare occurrence in the Old Testament. The few physical descriptions of the divine within the Bible are usually mysterious, as we know. This particular example of Daniel 7 is within an apocalyptic dream. God is pure, and in this particular passage, symbolized through physical whiteness, a known literary association in the ancient Near East. The description contrasts with that of the wicked rulers in earlier chapters, such as the Babylonian ruler Nebuchadnezzar. This Ancient of Days then is surrounded by a burning throne and wheels made up of fire. In the midst of this vision is the image of the image of a massive fire transforms the setting. The fires represent multiple meanings. This is a dominant fire which burns and flows out. Primarily, the fire symbolizes a mysterious divine. It also illuminates and reveals. It purifies. It punishes. None of these symbolic functions, though, he says, are mutually exclusive. It does all of these things. The pure and fiery deity then sits with many who serve him and stand before him. Whereas the opening lines shift the scene from four beasts of the night, these lines move the setting to a much more ordered place. The image depicts the setting of justice and power, mediated through a proper council with legions of attendants. The reference to opened books reveals an impending execution of judgment. The tension then reaches a culmination with the appearance of one like a human being. He appears before the Ancient of Days and accordingly receives the promise that all will serve this one and his dominion will last for the ages. So he asks the question then, were you able to read or hear any of that and not think of Jesus? I think when we get to that part about the one who will serve and last for ages, I think sometimes it's, you know, our brain just immediately jumps to Jesus. But without that lens, without that Jesus lens, we can see that this passage would have brought probably a great relief to a community that is in a terrible situation, in a fearful situation. The dream originally talks about the four beasts, but then there's hope. Again, there's that word, remember, if you joined me last week, these apocalyptic texts usually have hope within them. He says, I would suspect that many of the readers could relate to the themes of fear and uncertainty within that, you know, the scarier part of this vision. Collectively, such fears are certainly relatable during this and so many seasons of our own history and our own, you know, cultures and society and everything that is going on around us. And all of us in our lives have experienced loss. We've experienced fear. No matter, you know, the greater culture, individually, we've all experienced loss and fear. So, but the text then from Daniel shifts the narrative, of loss to one of victory. The people that are being described in this text knew suffering, but they also longed for a time of deliverance. And this deliverance is promised to them by that Ancient of Days, who is a pure and fiery ruler. and who will bring forth a divine figure who is also like a human being. And this is good news. So fear will not reign. It will not have the last word. Justice will be restored. And you can see how this would have given great hope to the people who are reading it. And you can also see how it's such a good lead-in to Advent, because we too are going into a season where we are anticipating the light coming into the darkness. And so we can understand whether or not we read this text of Daniel through that lens of Jesus, we can still read it through the lens of light and hope coming into darkness and despair, however you picture that. And that is the season of Advent, where we wait in breathless anticipation for the light to come into the darkness and the hope to come to our time of fear and despair. It is time for our second break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the psalm assigned for this week. So stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast, and I'll be right back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be. Visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Welcome back to the GSMC Bible Study Podcast on this Christ the King Sunday. Before the break, we were talking about the text assigned from the book of Daniel. And now, as I said, we're moving our attention to the psalm for this week, which is Psalm 93. It's not a terribly long psalm. It is only five verses. So those verses are as follows. The Lord is King. He is robed in majesty. The Lord is robed, he is girded with strength. He has established the world, it shall never be moved. Your throne is established from old, you are from everlasting. The floods have lifted up, O Lord, the floods have lifted up their voice. The floods lift up their roaring. More majestic than the thunders of mighty waters, more majestic than the waves of the sea, majestic on high is the Lord. Your decrees are very sure. Holiness befits your house, O Lord, forevermore. And that is the five verses of Psalm 93. The psalmist certainly packed in a lot into those five voices, right? Just kind of this swelling crescendo of, it's not a long psalm, but I feel like there was a lot in there. And again, you know, the Lord is king, robed in majesty, girded with strength, established the world, it shall never be moved. Your throne is established from old, you are everlasting. Yep, we can see all of those great images and descriptions that make sense for why it is assigned on Christ the King Sunday. The commentary for this week comes from Beth L. Tanner, who is professor of Old Testament at New Brunswick Theological Seminary in New Brunswick, New Jersey. And Beth says that today's psalm gives the opportunity to provide some content to the phrase, God is King, or Lord is King, because Psalm 93 focuses particularly on God as creator and sustainer of the creation. It's a brief verse, a brief psalm with only five verses, but it moves through three stanzas in those five verses. So like I said, it packs a punch, it packs a wallop. The first stanza declares, the Lord is King, and then continues to declare the majesty and strength of God, who has firmly established the world for eternity. The second stanza then leaves the realm of humans to remind us that there is more to God's reign than human issues and concerns. The image in the psalm is intense and frightening. Many of us, she says, have seen the devastation brought when the rivers lift up their pounding waves. Floods are a very dramatic image, and they are very scary when you are in the midst of them. So we understand that this can be a frightening image, and it would have been frightening to the people who were listening to this psalm in its original context as well. You know, the churning waters, she says, were the very definition of chaos. In a world gone crazy, it is comforting, though, to realize that even the chaotic waters obey God. God controls even the most chaotic natural forces on the earth, she says. And so then we have to ask ourselves the question, if God can control those forces, does that mean that God sends natural disasters as some kind of divine punishment? But just as with the rest of the universe, the creation, it runs by a set of natural laws. And of course, weather changes and earthquakes all function by their own sets of rules. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go into climate and weather and natural disasters and everything that comes with us. So the problem, of course, also comes from growing human population. There's just so much that has changed throughout history, right? We're no longer migratory. That sometimes gives a negative side to, you know, when we live stationary, that can sometimes give negative sides to natural order. And sometimes natural disasters are simply unexplainable. Yet we remain unable, she says, to completely control the chaotic side of creation. So it appears this is one of the limits that is set for humans in the universe. Yeah, there's so many reasons for natural disasters. We can't just say, well, God controls creation, so clearly God sent that. Well, God also gave us free will, and we have chosen to do many, many things in the thousands of millions of years of human history that have changed everything, our surroundings, our world, and yes, natural disasters are a part of that. And sometimes we can't explain them. Maybe someday science will be better able to explain certain things, but not at this point. Anyway, moving on to the final stanza, which is verse 5. This stanza places God's decrees as part of God's vast kingdom. God's commands and holiness are as constant as the natural order. She says we do not often think of the decrees of God and the maintaining of creation together, yet here and in several other psalms, this is exactly what is declared. She goes on to say that God decrees that the sun runs its course, but God also decrees that we should care for the least of God's creation, and these things are linked. It takes both decrees to make our world run in the ways that God intended. In fact, she says it is the foundation. This link is the foundation of God's kingdom. Yes, the sun is going to run its course. Some things are inevitable, but we have also been called to notice and care for the least of creation, to care for those who are vulnerable in this world. Now, the psalm as a whole provides us with a glimpse of the kingdom, and obviously that fits in with the theme of Christ the King Sunday. It's easy to assign these attributes to Christ as the King and thus maybe ignore our own responsibility. But in order to participate in the kingdom, we too are responsible for our part in it. God's decrees are the equivalent of Jesus's teachings, and his focus on those in need of our help today even includes the very creation itself. What we know that these ancient folks did not is that we would eventually gain the power not only to hurt the poor of the people, but to also inflict harm on the very creation God set in place. We must remember that the creation has its own relationship with God and praises God in its way, and we are part of that creation. And so as part of our calling to the kingdom, we are called to care for God's creation. from the least of it to the most majestic and most amazing. In this psalm, humans and creation join together in praise, and it's our calling to assure that this continues, so that it's possible just as God, the creator and the sustainer of our world, intended. So that's a very different look at Christ the King Sunday, right? A very different look at God's creation and our role within it. But God's creation is part of God's kingdom, as we've talked about before, that, you know, that foretaste of the feast to come, when we get images of that feast to come, when we are all gathered together at the culmination of all of God's promises, it is all of God's creation. All of God's creation is involved in that feast. And so we are called to care for that creation, not just our human brothers and sisters, but our non-human brothers and sisters and our environment and the world around us. Because, yes, we look forward to that. We anticipate that time when we can spend eternity with God. But God gave us this life and this place here, and we are called to care for that and to care for one another. So Christ the King Sunday, not exactly the image of a king that maybe we would have pictured as children. Maybe it's still something that makes us scratch our heads and say, Christ the King, that sounds like an oxymoron. It kind of is in some ways, but we are going to talk more about these texts on Wednesday when we turn our attention to the New Testament texts. So thank you so much for joining me on this Christ the King Sunday, and I look forward to chatting again with you on Wednesday. In the meantime, please do remember that you are a beautiful and beloved child of God. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Bible Study Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.